Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
You know, I guess I thought it might be worth raising. Are there any positives about the nightmare we've shared?
That was Shiv Roy or me talking to any of my co-hosts after I finished up a season of Decoding TV. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Decoding TV, a podcast about television. I'm David Chen. I'm here today with my normal co-host for Decoding TV. You've heard her on A Cast of Kings and covering other things of that nature. Kim Renfro, how are you doing this evening?
Hello, hello. Happy to be here.
Joining me today, he is also a media strategist, mogul, personal friend. There's many designations for him, but you might know him best as the man who co-hosts Decoding TV, an ongoing bonus episode series on the DecodingTV.com feed this season. David Cho, how are you doing this evening?
Honestly, it's such an honor to be here. You know, you kept me hidden away in the ghettos of Patreon for a long time, and wow, Now you've really unleashed me here in this live stream, no less. You know, I'm excited. It's the episode worth doing it for.
Indeed, yeah. Well, welcome, David Cho. Welcome, Ken Renfro. Of course, we are broadcasting this live this evening at youtube.com/decodingTV. Mere minutes, like half an hour after the series finale of Succession has just aired. Season 4, Episode 10, With Open Eyes. You can find more episodes of this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. And be sure to follow us on Instagram and TikTok and, of course, YouTube and Twitter at Decoding TV. We are going to spoil everything that has happened up through the end of Succession. So do not
all
listen.
All of Succession ever.
All of it's Succession all ever. Spoiled. It's all about to get spoiled. So do
if you
not
haven't seen it, you should watch it. It's a good show.
It's pretty good. Pretty solid. Pretty solid. Of course, people are probably aware that we typically, you know, Kim and I generally are given the episodes in advance. And so we'll watch the episodes, there'll be copious notes taken, and then we'll dive in with an extremely structured plan for the podcast. That has not occurred because very few people were given the final episode of Succession early. And so this conversation is going to be less structured. It's going to be a little bit more freewheeling than usual. That being said, I do want to call out a couple things before we get to our thoughts on the season finale. First of all, I want to mention that there is going to be at least one more episode covering Succession. Next week on the podcast, we're going to be covering Barry, the series finale, on This Week in Streaming. And then the episode after that, we're going to do a Succession Season 4 postmortem. So you can look forward to that as well on the podcast. Because I know as we're in the excitement of the moment, there's going to be a lot of stuff we missed. And so we'll have another episode to kind of talk about all the stuff we missed. And if you want us to react to your theories, your reactions, your review of Succession Season 4, email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. And we will react to your feedback and comments on the season on that final episode. Okay. I think that is it. Before we get to the conversation about the episode, there is one other thing I wanted to mention, though, Kim Renfro, which is the title of the episode is called With Open Eyes, and you accurately figured out what that is in reference to, correct?
Yeah, they continued a pattern that they've been following for the season finales so far, where each episode title has been a phrase from a poem called Dream Song 29 by John Berryman. I'm so sorry, it's blanking whatever the season one finale was. All the Bells? All the Bells Say? Was that season one finale?
I don't think that was season one.
This is not for tears. They've done All the Bells Say. This is not for tears. Nobody is ever missing. That might have been the season one.
Yeah, Nobody's Ever Missing, I'm pretty sure, is Succession season one. And then All the Bells is season three. And then the other one is season two. So, yeah.
This is not for tears, season two. So then season four, we have With Open Eyes. So it's four stanzas, this poem. I could read the whole thing, I suppose, if you want. But the important takeaway is that the poem seems to be about the idea that there is a man in the poem. Our protagonist, his name is Henry, who there's like something that is basically haunting him, that like dwells in his mind, that he thinks of over and over again. And this, the part that they seem to be referencing the most says, "Ghastly with open eyes, he attends blind. All the bells say too late. This is not for tears thinking." And then it's like, I it's very Kendall coded in my mind. And this episode and the way that it ended and this title just completely cemented that for me, where I think that that final shot that we're left with Kendall is in the same way that in this poem, this thing haunts this person and he can never kind of like dig it up no matter how he seeks to sort of like find that closure. Kendall and that waiter who died likely because of him seems to be the thing that will haunt him for the rest of his life as the reason why he could not ultimately succeed as father. I think she says right. 40 minutes after the episode ended, hoping I've referenced that poem correctly.
Wait, Dave, can I ask him a question?
Yeah. Yeah. Go
outside
ahead.
I mean, Kim, you said that as though you think that the boy who died is the reason why Shiv, do you think that's why Shiv flipped?
I think ultimately the way that that came out from her in that moment, like felt true to me of like, that was something that that entire event plus her seeing Kendall's reaction to her mentioning it again in that moment does seem to me to be like that, like confirmed to her, like, yeah, I cannot hand this life to Kendall. Like it's probably setting him up for failure because I think that there's a lot more visibility on him as a CEO of Waystar and still having this thing happen in his past. But I think also just emotionally, I think that she clocked that he clearly was still completely out of sorts with that. And that like that emotional instability wasn't something that she could.
Oh, I thought it was all about Tom. I thought it was all about like, oh, go ahead, Dave.
I think that that was probably the beginning of it. And then as Kim indicated, like, the kid and the way he reacted to it was the decisive, like kind of tipped it over the edge or pushed it over the edge a little bit more. But I agree that Tom was a big
factor. She left the room, you know, like I feel like that's her saying, I'm not going to vote. Like, it was effective that the decision was made the second she left the room. I thought.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing that, Kim. Really great context. But
great
folks,
reading,
let's appreciate that. But let's start with our overall reaction to the episode. I mean, again, we just came off it. Our thoughts will change. It will marinate. But David Cho, let's start with you.
Really?
Yeah. What did you think? What did you think of the series finale? Did you find this to be a satisfying series finale? Do you think they stuck the landing?
It's funny. It's like I'm talking to the people in the comment thread and or in the chat room, and I'm also like, it's funny. Like as soon as it was over, I felt very empty. Like I was like, there was a part of me where, because it felt so much like almost like that episode from the first season on steroids, like because it was in the same room, because it was the same sort of, he needed a certain number of votes because it came down to the wire with one of his siblings. Like it felt so familiar to me in a way where I was kind of like, I was disappointed at first, but then the more I've sat with it over the last 30 minutes, I kind of feel like, oh no, they did exactly what they needed to. Like, it's like, that's exactly the way it should have ended. And it's, you know, I think I'm left wanting a lot more, not in a bad way. You know, I think it's like they stuck the landing, but it's just you and I were talking kind of offline about this. And I was sort of like, no one can predict what's going to happen, because even if you know what happens, it doesn't matter that much, because how they do it is really what matters. Like how they leave you feeling is what the show does so well, because the plot machinations are actually relatively simple usually.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, but the way they do it, you know, the fact that like at the end of last season, like that the mom betrayed the kids after they'd all come together that way.
And but then like, Tom, I mean, Tom portraying Shiv as well, which obviously was a big precursor to this episode as well.
So, I just like when they were at the house in the Bahamas or Caribbean or wherever, I was just kind of like, oh no. It's like when Kendall smiles like that, it's not gonna end that way.
Right. You know,
it's kind of like, it just felt like the extent to which they'd raise the jubilation kind of made me think
how far it's gonna
going to be equally you know, it's
absolutely
like,
absolutely Kim Renfro, let's go to you. What did you think of the series finale of Succession?
I don't even know. I didn't cry. That's the first thing that popped into my head. But like the credits rolled and I was like, huh. I did not feel as like emotional as I think I had like prepared myself to feel.
Yeah, because you've gotten pretty emotional at some of the other episodes, right? This season.
I was emotional this morning just thinking about things
about
that might happen.
Or about other things.
Think about things that might happen in the show or just in general in your life. Like,
it's all one big soup at this point. Come on. Like, I can't separate everything. Oh, God. Yeah, I don't know. So, but I think I agree that the things that were left open-ended don't feel frustrating to me. It actually feels kind of nice. Like, I'm like, oh, I get to sit here and decide what Kendall did after sitting on that bench and looking out in the water, whereas I was fully prepared at multiple points throughout the episode for Kendall to die.
Oh, no, Colin. I think Colin being there is meant to be a sign of, don't worry, he's not going to die at that specific moment. You know what I mean? I think they show him at that moment very specifically.
Yeah, you can clearly see him in the background.
Yeah, right. I think it's like meant to be one part like, oh, that was Logan and him walking in the park. But also, I think it was another part just so you know, don't worry, he's not going to die, because they'd done so much to him at that moment. You know what I mean? Like.
Yeah,
when he fucking goes after Roman. Oh, I'm sorry, I can't. When he freaking goes after Roman, like that to me was. Ugh.
Anyway, Kim, go ahead, finish what you're saying.
I guess not in that like now I'm wondering if Kendall's going to die or not, but more like is Kendall going to just shrink away with his money and like become a sad man, or is he going to find a way to reconnect with his family and children and like take the opportunity that's in front of him to like live a better life than he would have if he had continued needing to follow in Logan's footsteps. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that they left that open for us.
Yeah.
As opposed to doing what I was dreading, which was like cementing him as Logan's successor and being like, yeah, we just showed you the point of no return all over again. Wrote like, you know, the waiter is Kendall's Rose and he's going to spend the rest of his life punishing the world for the fact that he thinks he did something irredeemably evil. So.
It's not that show, though.
After the episode segment, which I actually watched, but there was an interesting bit about what Jesse Armstrong was like. Jesse Armstrong in the after the episode, he kind of gives a little summary of where he thinks each character is going after the show. So it's worth checking out. But the thing that he said about Roman that I thought was interesting is he says like, it's like Roman is. Like Roman in the bar and kind of having a little like, you know, impish smile. That's kind of like who he is. And it's almost like this whole entire last X years was like an interruption of that. Like he was going on in life, and then he kind of ventured into the corporate world for a little bit. And then now he's like back to where he like would have been otherwise, kind of.
Yeah.
That was what Jesse Armstrong said about that. But I'll share some of my thoughts on the episode, which. I'm reminded of something that Shane Black said about, you know, the movies that he writes, where he says, like, when you're watching a movie and it covers some period, you know, the movie is like over the course of 2 days or the movie is over the course of 1 week, that should be the most important week in that character's life or in your main character's life. You know, like, otherwise, why are we watching a movie about it? Like, we're watching a movie because this is the most important. And what I feel at this moment, as we're recording this, more strongly about the season than I do feel about the episode. I think the season overall was brilliant. I think having a season that is like takes place where like every episode basically covers a 24 to 48 hour period over the course of like 2 weeks is just like an amazing concept. I'm surprised more people aren't talking about it because I think it's just like a really amazing concept, super well done. It's the opposite of time jumps. It's like we're feeling every moment with
Kim,
these
I'm
people.
Sorry. He's like this. Let it go.
I mean, not even House of the Dragon related, but we were talking about at the end of last episode where I was worried that this episode was going to need a time jump by necessity. And I was kind of like wary of that because it's hard to pull off in a satisfying way.
It would have been too obvious because that's what I thought was going to happen too. I think like I was like of that mind, but I think they're smarter than that ultimately.
Yeah.
Like Jesse Armstrong really does have like a very specific vision. That's the one thing you can really take away from the season, I feel like.
Structure vision, character arc vision, it's great.
Also commitment to he's so committed to the story he wants to tell. Like it's really like there's really like, you know, you would hear about like other prestige HBO shows being affected by the world outside of them a lot.
Yeah.
And it really is commendable that considering everyone was talking about it as much as they were, that he really had what he wanted to make in his brain and he did it. Without any sort of like consideration for anything else.
So I really love the season, and I actually think the episode had what I would consider to be a happy ending. I actually think this is the best case scenario for these characters. Like,
yeah,
they didn't
unpack get what they, that, please.
Well, they didn't get what they wanted. You know, they have been removed from the kingdom. They've been betrayed by each other, by other people. But at the end of the day, like, this is where they belong. And they finally achieved something that has eluded them for years. Self-awareness.
David.
I think...
They're not.
I think Roman did. You know?
Achieved self-awareness?
It's this amazing scene at the end where Roman's like, hey, like... you're bullshit. Like, I'm, you know, she's bullshit, I'm bullshit. And here's the thing. And Roman says something along the lines of like, I know that we're bullshit. And that to me is like the defining line of the episode.
I think that's a fleeting moment of self-rationalization. I don't think it's true self-awareness to me. Kim, what did you think? Are you on Dave's side of like, they've reached some sort of like, if self-awareness is a happy ending, do you feel like they've achieved some version of self-awareness?
I don't think self-awareness is the thing that's making this feel like a happy ending or like the best case scenario ending for them. I think it's acceptance of the fucked up emotional hand they've been dealt.
Yeah.
And like they have somehow, seemingly accidentally, figure out a way to each prevent each other from like choosing the worst path forward for them. If that
do
makes
we think
sense.
That do we think that if one of them had become the Waystar Royco CEO, that would have been like I don't think that's the poison chalice you guys are presenting it as to me. Like I just don't like it's like I don't think that's what that meant. The ending I think the characters got was one where they all were like disparate pieces of their dad. And it's like the Shiv piece was the one where it's like, I think my kids are just fuck ups and none of them can handle it. Like, I feel like the Kendall one was the one where he will do whatever it takes by any means necessary, including like go into this like delusional, like fucking spin out about not having killed the kid, that it was a joke, all that stuff. Like, and I think the Roman one was the one you're talking about where it's just like he sort of has this some version of vulnerability that he deploys when he needs to sort of self-rationalize, but I don't know.
That's a great analysis. Kim, any thoughts? Do you have any thoughts on that? It seemed like you were reacting to that.
I just think I felt really... First of all, I mean, I guess I should just start by saying like Jeremy Strong in this episode, like... brought out every iteration of Kendall that we've ever seen in like quick succession.
Nailed it.
But I was thinking about when he, there's a scene in season two which is the closest Kendall comes to telling either Shiv or Roman about what actually happened at Shiv's wedding, where he's like telling Shiv, like, can you please look out for me? And he kind of implies, like, if dad didn't need me for this right now, I don't know what I would be for, mm-hmm. I think he says, which is like pain. And then when he is spiraling, as he sees that like Shiv is like very close to taking this thing away from him, and he says like, please, please, I will die. Like, if you don't give this to me, my life means nothing. And to me, like, I clocked that as like, that is the number one sign that you shouldn't have this. Mm-hmm. Like, if literally the thing keeping you alive right now is the prospect of running a multi-billion-dollar company that is clearly like pushing you towards the edge of your mental brink, like, that was when I think Shiv clocked, like, okay, now I really can't let him.
Right. Oh, I thought it was more that he didn't think that any other job would have him. This was the only thing that he thought he could actually do and matter in the world. And like, that's the way I read the Roman thing too. It's like them kind of saying, like, it's like they're all deal, like they, like all of us, are dealing with some version of imposter syndrome. And he's like, if I don't get this chance, I will never get the chance to do anything that matters again.
Well, yeah. So again, David Cho, you know, this is why I feel like they're, and actually both of you, this is why I feel like people are finally spitting truths. They're like, hey, that is the most self-aware I've ever seen Kendall, where he's like, if I don't get this, I will die, which is like probably an exaggeration. But yeah, he says something along the lines of, I tried to like write it down, but I didn't get it quite right. But it's like, I'm a cog only fit to work in one machine, basically, or something along those lines, you know? So, but yeah, anyway, overall, I thought it was a very satisfying finale. Is it one of the greats? Not sure yet. I'm going to need to think about that. We'll talk a little bit more about that in the next episode of the podcast, or the in a couple episodes of the podcast. But the season, I just thought was brilliant. Has a really decent shot of being my favorite season overall of Succession.
Yeah.
Just in terms of how beautifully it was constructed, and the ending felt very, I would say it felt pretty satisfying. It felt like this is what these characters in some way deserve. It felt right to me. Now,
let me ask, did either of you have like a laugh out loud moment in this episode?
I did. I forget what it was now, though. I remember like being like enjoying watching the show for a lot of it before it got really fucking dark.
Oh, you know what? Oh, go ahead, Kim. You go.
I was going to say, I cracked up at the way that Kendall / Jeremy Strong just flung the ice out of that cup. Something about the way that like this extremely serious situation is happening, and like I was all tense, I don't know what's going on, and something about the way that he just like, as if that's just a thing that a rich person does all the time, of like, I don't want this ice in this cup, I'm gonna fling it up. I don't know, something about that really got
Dave,
me.
Do you know what she's
like,
talking
I love
about?
This show.
What is she referring to? What are you referring to, Kim?
When it's in like the, when they're in Caroline's house, their mom's vacation home, and Kendall goes down to like the little like patio overlooking the water, and it's this like beautiful setting.
There's glasses. With
oh yeah, 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 yeah. And he goes like, to pour himself a thing, and he just like, whoop, yep, yep. That was great. That was great.
I thought Stewie had a really good funny moment in this episode. Like Chairman Stewie, I enjoyed a lot. Like that felt very classic Succession to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like a nice little like, you know, tête-à-tête with Stewie was fun.
He also cracked up at the wartime pickle that Roman found in his mother's fridge.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god, when I was watching that, I was like, fuck, Jeremy Strong's so method. I bet that shit is all of that shit, and I bet he did drink it. The fucking
brown,
psycho.
Mm-hmm.
I can't
brown,
wait.
Brown smoothie.
That's gonna be something that I know will come out in the next 2 days, and I can't wait to find out what that drink actually was, because there's a part of me that's just like, he's such a nut and so committed to being Kendall that like he was like, no, make it as gross as possible, man. I need it to be as gross as possible. I need to live this.
I had a couple laugh out loud moments. First of all, I want to call out the Order of the Bees in the chat, who says, I started laughing when their mom's husband tried to sell them something. I was like, are you serious? That was my like most humorous portion of the episode, I thought, because
he flew in from Monaco, man. Come on, just let him pitch.
Because you kind of got the sense of who Peter Munyon was when the mom married him at the end of season three, I think it was, right? Yeah. And she's like, yeah, you know, Peter's just, he's had a bunch of shitty luck recently, but like, you gotta, and it's like, oh, of course the reason why like Caroline wants to get a get together is so like Peter and his buddy can pitch the young Roy children on some weird scheme. And then like, you only hear like, yeah. I'm gonna guess like 20 words from the pitch. And it's something along the lines of like, well, you know, these are very, very good, you know, accommodations. I mean, nothing that you would actually want for yourself, but like,
it was like the margins are too good for me to not pitch this to you. Yeah,
exactly. So that was very enjoyable. There was also this weird moment where Caroline, the mom character, talks about eyes and like how they're like jellies
in the face.
Yeah, face eggs, which, by the way, like Jesse Armstrong, before Succession, made a show called Peep Show, which is a brilliant sitcom. And that felt like a very Peep Show-esque observation that eyes are face eggs, basically. Extremely Dave, Peep Show line.
You told me not to look at the chat, but I do think that there is something that we have to talk about that they're talking about in the chat about, like, everyone's kind of talking about why Shiv did what she did. And I know it's sort of out of the order of the show, but I do think
we will get to it.
You want to start from the beginning?
Yes, we will get to it. We will get to it. Let's go in order, David Cho. Okay. Before we're going to take a break in a moment. Before we do that, I want to acknowledge one thing about Decoding TV listeners. You see, last week on the podcast, I said, "Hey, people, write in with your theories on what is going to happen," and I promised that if somebody got it correct, I would acknowledge it publicly on the podcast. Now, before I describe what I'm about to describe, I do also just want to say, hey, thanks to everyone at Decoding TV for following along with us this season. It's been a lot of fun. I know Kim's really enjoyed the podcast. I really enjoyed doing the bonus episodes with David for paid members at decodingtv.com. So I just want to express my appreciation for everyone who's like joined us for the journey this season. Podcast.decodingtv.com, where you can get the other episodes and become a paid member to support this podcast at decodingtv.com. But Isaac from New York wrote into decodingtv@gmail.com, and he says, I take no credit for this theory, but I thought it was so genius I wanted to pass it along. And he sends me this TikTok video. Now, I'm going to play a clip from this TikTok video. Some of you might have seen this already. But it's from a TikTok account called Nameberry, which analyzes names. And somebody analyzed what the one, like, all the names in the show are very obvious what they mean. Like, Roy means king, and, you know, and so you can go through all the names and they all have like special meaning. But there's one name that's very atypical, that's very weird in the show. It's Wamsgams. Why would somebody be named Wamsgams? Well, here is a clip from that TikTok from Nameberry. I'm going to play it for you right now. Here it is.
No, the real reason he was given the last name Wamsgans is because of this guy. This is Bill Wamsgans, an MLB player during the early 20th century. He is remembered for one thing, and that is completing the only unassisted triple play in World Series history. He took out three players at once in what is essentially the finale of baseball. It's no coincidence that Tom shares a surname with Bill Wamsgans, so you have to wonder if Tom will complete an unassisted triple play and take out all three of the Roy siblings to become the leader of Waystar Royco in the Succession finale.
There you have it, folks. Tom Wamsgans shares a name with Bill Wamsgans, a person who is famous for getting an unassisted triple play during the World Series. And in fact, Tom Wamsgans knocked out all three Roy siblings to become the CEO of whatever Waystar Royco subsidiary is going to be resulting from this merger. So Isaac wrote that in. He didn't claim credit for it, but that is a prediction that was going around. Now, does Jesse Armstrong know who Bill Wamsgans is? I have no idea. I'm not going to say it would be a very funny coincidence if that was the case, but it is a fact that Tom Wamsgans was the winner. So wanted to acknowledge.
Also a fact that everyone just forgot about Connor Roy again.
So true. Shoko.
Got out all three Roy siblings.
Anyway, we'll talk more about what happened with
Connor's
the Roy siblings.
More of a player coach. More of a third base coach sort of energy.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk more about who ended up winning in succession in a moment. But first, I want to mention that this episode of Decoding TV is brought to you by the McDonald's app.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
I don't know about you guys, but when you're rushing off to a board meeting, you don't have a lot of time to hang around, do stuff that regular people do, which is why I would recommend, if you want McDonald's for lunch, but you don't want to deal with that lunch rush, download the McDonald's app. Pick your location. Order ahead. Select curbside or counter. You can pick up your food when you get there. They prep it while you're on the way. Order in the app. Select curbside or counter. And that is it. Now, I know that this is something that Kendall definitely could have used in season one of the show when he was rushing to get to the board meeting in season one, episode six, Which Side Are You On? Less so this time. This time he sauntered leisurely into the place as though he owned it. But you got to imagine
I mean,
all the Roy
does own it, to his credit.
Indeed. You got to imagine.
I have the McDonald's app, Dave.
Excellent. Yeah, it's definitely an app worth downloading. I use it all the time. It's super enjoyable, easy, fun to use. But yeah, no matter what reason you have for skipping the line today, order ahead in the app to save time. Again, just order ahead in the app. Pick your location, select curbside or counter. McDonald's will get it ready while you're on the way so it's hot and fresh. You can pick up your food faster at the counter or curbside when you get there. So order in the app to save time. Prep while you're on the way excludes drive-through at participating McDonald's. Copyright 2023 McDonald's. Thanks to McDonald's for sponsoring Decoding TV.
Dave, would you say you were loving it, the finale?
I am. I would say I'm really enjoying McDonald's, and I'm loving the finale, and I'm enjoying this conversation that we're having live right now on youtube.com/decodingTV, David Joe. So let's get into it, folks. Now, you know, I thought it might be interesting to reflect on what the finale didn't cover. There was a few plot lines that we didn't get to in the finale, right? First of all, you know, imagine I'm in The Wire season one and I'm asking, where's Wallace? Except instead of where's Wallace, I'm asking, where's Pierce, guys? I want to know what happens to Pierce and the 100, you know? Very disappointing we never got to see Nan again. So would have loved to have
100 mention.
We did get 100 mention. That's true.
But yeah.
Were there any other, the other thing actually somebody in the chat brought up earlier was like, I am kind of disappointed at how the Marcia storyline played out. Like, remember Marcia being on the board was a huge part of season one, and like they seemingly just like completely forgot about that plot. I guess they just didn't, maybe again, Hi, I'm a Boss wasn't available, or they couldn't work it out creatively or whatever, but like Marcia is basically a non-presence in this episode. And on that note, like the Carrie stuff, I thought it might like pay off in some other way. It didn't really pay off. It really feels like episode nine was kind of the show saying goodbye to all these characters, you know, like the Carrie, the Marcia stuff. Like that's like kind of the way that the show kind of ushers those characters out. But yeah, just wanted to acknowledge, like, those are some of the plot lines that I was wondering if they'd come up this season. And they didn't really come up in the finale. Was there anything that you were disappointed? Any of you two were disappointed that the finale did not address?
Oh, the chat rightly points out that she was going to join the trust, not the board. So the family's stake of the board or the company, necessarily she wasn't getting like a board seat. I think the thing that I was hoping for a time jump for that we didn't get, and this is just because like out of my own curiosity, was like, was Gojo the real deal or not? Like that's something I was just genuinely curious about. Like, was Mattson actually qualified, or is he just, you know, a really good salesman?
Was he gonna
Musk Twitter it, or was he gonna whatever the opposite of that is?
Kiki Kajit in the chat says didn't get much fallout from the election. We didn't really get a, like, we get some hints that
what happens to the election,
does Jared Mencken win the election? We don't really know. We get some hints that maybe there's some trouble there, but like we don't really find out. Loner Shark in the chat says most jettisoned plotline was Gretchen Schwartz's Logan Roy biography. You know, I don't know that it was the most.
Excuse me, Roman's children from episode one, from the pilot, would beg to disagree.
Yeah, that's true. And I would actually argue that the biography kind of served its purpose as a plot line in season two.
Yeah, it gave us Boar on the Floor.
It gave us Boar on the Floor. It gave us That rat effer guy, you know, gave us like all the stuff with those machinations. Frank coming back, all that stuff. So I think that did serve a purpose. But yeah, any other plot lines that
you and Kim, I feel like we're very big on the podcast could come back. You guys thought that the podcast that was hinted at towards the end of last season was going to be something about Kendall's.
There was a true crime podcast boy. That they said. Yeah, it was less the true crime podcast and more that I felt this season had to deal with Kendall Roy being responsible for this person's death somehow. Like,
yeah,
we got this big blowout at the end of the season. Of season three, and I my argument, David Cho, is that I think this episode did do that. I think it did come back in a way that was meaningful. So it wasn't like I needed the podcast. It was more like that. In my opinion, that couldn't have been the final scene of the kid's death coming up. In my opinion, so David Cho,
podcast mention you mean couldn't have been the last.
No. Exactly. Like because in that episode, Kendall confesses to his. Right. Siblings, and then Roman consoles him, and then that's it. It's like no, there needs to be something, some more fallout from that, in my opinion.
Right,
Cho. It sounds like you're vehemently disagreeing with what I'm saying.
Not vehemently disagreeing. I thought it would play a part because in 9, Kendall goes to Colin, which means that like because Kendall tied a loose end up, that meant. There had to be a string that would get pulled on. You know what I mean? It's like
if Kendall feels safe, then
it's gonna get fucked up. You know what I mean? It's like when Colin joins Kendall and you see him driving him in the car at the beginning of this episode, I was like, oh fuck, like something's gonna go awry. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But well, I don't know. The thing with Colin that I thought, you know, I wanted to bring this up actually last episode, Kim, was I talked about how I felt like there were a lot of Sopranos and mob parallels to last season. Like, I think we're meant to understand that because Roman cried and showed weakness in front of Mencken, that he kind of effed the deal. Like, that was my sense of how that played out. And you're not supposed to cry if you're in the mob, in the mafia. Like, that's a big no-no. But the other thing is, the premise of The Sopranos is Tony Soprano is seeing a psychiatrist, and that is also a huge no-no. People do not want someone confessing their crimes to a psychiatrist. And so Kendall kind of confronts Colin last episode, says like, hey, don't go see a head shrinker anymore. Come work for me. So I wanted to acknowledge that I thought there were many mob parallels in the between the corporate world and the mob as depicted in The Sopranos. So didn't have a chance to call that out, but I wanted to mention it.
Forget about it.
Anything else that wasn't in the episode? I mean, we might get to them later, but I think that's those are the main things that I'm like, huh, I guess those things never really paid off. So
I think ultimately the reason they didn't is because it's a show about those three kids and the trauma they have from their dad. When it's all said and done, it's like the show doesn't actually care about what happens with Gojo. The show doesn't care about anything besides just how much did this dad, his wealth, his power, his whatever, just ruin his kids' lives in a way that, like, it's just like it's a show about generational trauma, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, folks, let's talk about what actually goes on this episode. So when the episode begins, obviously, Shiv and Kendall are both trying to, like, round up the votes. And it seems as though Shiv is winning. She is with Madsen. They seem to have the votes. And Kendall is kind of on his back foot, but very energetic. He really thinks he can do it. And Tom is kind of this question mark factor. It's unclear like whether Tom is going to survive whatever happens next. There is a, in my opinion, really great scene with Madsen and Tom where Madsen asks Tom to pitch him on Tom being the new CEO. And I felt it kind of soft pitch him. And I felt it kind of characterized the kind of, casual misogyny that is like existent in this universe.
It's very painful to watch.
Yeah. The idea that like,
he's a grinder, Kim.
the whole not Tom, Madsen. I felt myself like, I like stiffened and was just like shrinking up until he finally said, I kind of want to F her.
Clickety. Well, because they clickety click, you know?
Yeah, they clickety click. But what's upsetting, you know, is like, it's because Mattson is attracted to her. So he's like, therefore she cannot be CEO. It's like,
yeah,
that's just a deeply unjust, you know, arrangement, obviously.
Also the weirdness of like him seeing it as a power thing to get to puppet the man who impregnated her. Like, he made it very clear.
Yeah, that was really upsetting. Like, that was really upsetting.
A piece of the deal. And then Tom said, okay, that sounds great. Let's definitely treat my wife like a piece of meat with a vagina who can grow a baby.
I think the real, I mean, not misogyny, but the real sort of weak manness thing of it is, it was obviously the story was the thing that set that all in motion. Like, he can say every single time that the cartoon didn't bother him, but when there is a massive profile of you and the key art is her pulling his strings, like, that was definitely like, that set everything into motion. Also, incredibly quick turnaround time for a profile and that art to get commissioned to do the illustration.
Yeah, those are in the industry, those are called long lead time features.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It usually takes like...
Even The New Yorker, it's like they print, you know, 2 weeks in advance. It's like, how long have they been fucking working together? Like, it's been 5 days.
Yeah.
So the...
I would disagree, ahead, though, yeah, with like the idea that that was only when he tipped into no longer like respecting her
you
or
think
wanting
so?
Her to be... Yes! The very first time that they met, the way that he like refused to hug her and then...
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah. True. I mean, he's always been a piece of shit.
Here,
sure.
Let Kim finish, please.
Yeah, to me, it's not even about like, oh, he's always been a piece of shit. It's that he never, like, again, that line that Shiv said in her eulogy, where she said that her father could never fit a whole woman in his head. Like, Mattson's just also one of those guys to me. Like, he never looked at her and was taking her seriously as a business person. He was always weirdly attracted to her or weirdly into the idea that he could mess with her in a way because she was a woman that he couldn't with her brothers. Like, that felt very clear to me from the start. And I just wasn't sure if Shiv was into that or not, or like if Shiv was like on board with that or playing along. And I thought maybe she was, but like watching the conversation play out between Mattson and Tom without her there was very hard for me to watch, because it was just so blatantly like, yeah, this is just what happens behind the scenes. You give a woman, he was happy to take her ideas when they were good and when they were benefiting him. And then he tells Tom that it's actually kind of annoying that she has so many good ideas, because he doesn't want a smart person advising him. He wants a puppet, and he especially can't handle the fact that Shiv won't be his puppet or fuck him. Sorry. F him.
Well, it's horrible to have all of your worst assumptions confirmed by hearing how he talks about her, for sure.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's interesting, because it's like, it's hard because it's like, both things are true, where he's extremely misogynistic, but also Shiv kind of at times goofed her, like her execution of working Mattson as well. I think it's like, I think,
but
like,
no, she worse than Shiv. Tom, but sorry.
No, I think they all, I think, she, no, I think, well, I think it's like, it's, she kept doing the thing that she's done throughout the show, where it's like, she gets her a little bit over, she puts the cart a little bit before the horse, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, Tom is definitely not more qualified, but, well, I mean, I don't know, it's hard to say, because he's actually running ATN, but like, you know, it's like, but she always like overplays her hand a little bit. I mean, listen, none of them are fucking qualified, they're all fucking jokes, like, fucking let Jerry run the company.
That's one of the things I love about the ending of Tom being on like the final victor, is every single time we have seen Tom, every single time we've seen Tom Wamsgams in a corporate environment, he has been almost completely incompetent. Like, there was, we saw a glimpse of him in, obviously in the election episode, but
the
also
Argestes.
In Argestes, We Hear For You, in also the Living Plus episode, where, I don't know if you remember, like, he gave a little speech. He's like, you're all part of the Waystar family, and you're all part, and I'm part, and it's just like, this is the empty-headed, absolutely no skills, failing upward nepo baby, like, whatever the heck it is, you know. And the idea that he, you know, this guy who Shiv rightfully refers to as an empty suit, is the guy who ends up running the place, is, in my opinion, a very solid, symbolic, thematically resonant plot development for this show. So
he was like, Waystar Royco, the place where you can watch ATN.
Yes,
exactly.
Dave got it. David first was like, "What the fuck is he saying?"
It's actually David Cho. It's the one to watch for ATL. Oh, I mean, yeah. That's it's Max, the one to watch for HBO, right? So
I wrote I was like, I was doing hand notes while watching the episode as much as I could, and one of the only full quotes I wrote down was Tom saying, "I have an excess of vigilance and a high tolerance of pain and physical discomfort." Which was like his qualifications for being a good CEO for Madsen. And I was like,
I thought Tom, the thing is, I thought Tom's pitch was terrible. I mean, David Cho, you have dealt with people pitching.
He's like, I'll work. I mean, Shiv says it right. He'll suck the biggest dick in the room. And he can, you know?
Yeah.
When Shiv's right, she's right.
Yeah.
But it's even like, you know, Madsen, I think he's like, what's your hang like? Is that what he says? He's like, he's basically Madsen asking, like, what's your vibe? And like, Tom gives an answer that is so unlike Madsen's vibe. It's ridiculous. It's just like he is completely misreading Madsen in general.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but in some ways, it's an unintentional good pitch because Madsen wants someone he can like, he wants a puppet.
Yeah,
he said he wants a pain sponge. Right? Yeah, like the word he used, and I was like, if there's anyone on this show who's a pain sponge, it's Tom. Yeah.
Like, what did you think that meant? I was trying to understand it. I was like, how? Like, what pain is he going to need sponged?
Well, because he's saying we're going to cut close to the bone. So the Gojo ATN Waystar Royco merger is going to result in tens of thousands of layoffs, and he needs someone to absorb the pain and anger that will come from
he has the fake India numbers too that he has to like he also needs someone to absorb
Cruises. So that's what's brilliant too. Sorry, go ahead, David Cho, go ahead.
No, he's a really good pain sponge. It's like when you think of Cruises, when you think of all that, he was gonna go to jail. He was willing to go to jail, which is like as far as like empty pain sponges go, it's like it's a pretty good trait for one.
And like his whole relationship with Shiv has been like training up in pain sponge levels, like, right? And now I guess they're just going to do that together forever.
Oh my gosh.
Question mark? Big Gone Girl
at least
energy.
For a few more months.
But I, per the thing we were just discussing, what I love about that too is, yes, Tom is the victor, but it's like he is ruling over a kingdom of ashes. Like this will be a Waystar Royco before the Gojo acquisition or after the Gojo acquisition is going to be a terrible time. It's not going to, there's very little enjoyment to be had in that. So I love that part about the ending too. We don't see it. We only see the pen signing and the ceremony and everything, but it is going to be choppy waters ahead for them.
It is funny how we're like, they're all so fucked. And it's like, the kids are all richer than they've ever been before.
Yes. Yes.
Like they can do whatever they want. And it's just, I mean, I think it's a good move by the show to make us feel like they all lost so vehemently while just effectively getting the freedom to do whatever they want moving forward, and they just lost this one thing that was impressing their dad.
Yeah,
indeed. If you're just tuning in, by the way, hello. This is the Decoding TV YouTube channel. We're reviewing and discussing the series finale of Succession. I'm David Chen here with Kim Renfro and David Cho. We're talking about the first half of the episode, the lead up, and Greg decides to jump ship around this part of the episode when Tom is negotiating with Madsen. I think because he's tired of being kicked around and he's like, maybe I can get a better deal if I jump ship because I have this nuclear information that's extremely important. And so he uses the Google Translate app to understand what Madsen is saying to his underling or whatever Translate. I don't know if it's Google Translate, but it's like a very, very efficient Translate app. I will say I tried to use Google Translate to understand the Swedish that Madsen was speaking in a previous episode, and it did not work.
You're a real Greg.
Yeah, I'm a real...
Dave the egg.
Yes. Dave Chen and Greg think in a lot of the same ways. So, but yeah.
I don't think he was jumping ship. I think Greg is just always trying to hop onto whatever thing is flashing in front of him at any given moment. Because it's like he was in with the Madsen guys too. It's like I think he wanted to have a leg up anywhere he went.
I don't agree because there is this big scene where he confronts Tom and he actually fights back for the first time. You know,
yeah.
And that's so I think it's basically like Greg has been growing in you know, his spine has slowly started to come in.
He went from being an egg to a chick. Greg the chick. Not that's right. A chicken, not a woman. That's right.
A Greglet.
A Greglet, yeah. But that's why I think he's like, he wanted to like, he thought he could get a better deal with Kendall. That's my sense. So, but he calls Kendall with the information and gives it to them and reveals that Shiv is not going to be in charge. And that turns Shiv and causes all these events to go on. Trigva in the chat says, I did not like that 1 second we got of new Jess. What job did Jess go to? wanted to acknowledge that, yeah, we heard about new Jess. I don't even think we saw new Jess's face, if I recall.
I don't think we did.
We see someone's body, and like their head is turned to the side, and that's new Jess. So leading up to that, there's all the stuff that happens in Barbados. I believe they're in Barbados because he says, Kendall references the fact that they're in BIM, and BIM is short for Barbados, I think, is a nickname for Barbados.
So it's news to me. Good to know.
There is a lot of great stuff in Barbados. Obviously, it looks beautiful. It's very characteristic of Succession. Shiv thinks she's won, but she hasn't. Then she finds out the information. Like, Roman's still kind of like figuring out whether he gives a crap or not. So there's a lot of good stuff with the siblings, but obviously kind of the culmination is the scene where Shiv and Roman talk amongst themselves and decide that they're going to anoint Kendall the king. And actually the whole lead up I thought was very good, because there's this whole sequence where they realize that Logan has promised each of them individually that they would run the place. And he was either lying to them all or he's telling the truth to them all at the time. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. Like, what matters is what they decide at this point. And I thought that was a very poignant scene. Kim, did you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I loved the line where Kendall says, like, you know, he told me when I was 7 and he told me first. And then Roman's like, well, he told me last. And it's like, yeah, you could make the strong case for either of those being quote unquote, like the real offer or like the more important offer. And it was cathartic to just have them all put that out there and then all at once sort of be able to acknowledge, like, okay, yeah, every time that we've really tried each claiming our stake here, we've just been taking turns, like, having the hubris to think that we have our father's favor, when in the reality was none of us seem to actually have it ever, is what that felt like to me. I don't know, what do you guys think?
Quick correction. Miss Brown Sugar in the chat says, I thought BIM was short for Bimini Bahamas. So, in fact, that might be true. You know, I think I might have got my BIMs mixed up. Apparently, BIM means a Barbadian person. So, my bad. Bahamas is perhaps the more accurate description of where they are. Anyway.
They're a three-hour flight away. That's all that matters. They're a three-and-a-half-hour flight away from New York.
Yeah.
Right.
So, in any case, then Shiv and Roman kind of decide they're going to anoint Kendall. There's this whole scene where they swim out there and anoint him.
I had one thing. I did have one disappointment in the episode. I thought both of their Kendall impressions were not very good. there's a real opportunity for them to really just kind of wow us, because they've spent so much time with them. Like, and a good Kendall impression really lands, you know? And I agree.
And especially in the extremely online world we're in today, we have seen many great Kendall impressions, you know?
Yeah. And you
can't show up with a weak Kendall impression, unfortunately.
And they're both great actors, too. And so I thought they'd have a really good one.
I thought they would nail it, too. You know? I would agree with you, David Cho. I think it was a little bit lacking. But then they kind of hang out in the kitchen, and it's one of the kind of emotional climaxes of the episode. I don't think we've ever seen them this happy before. We've never seen them kind of get along this well. Kim Renfro, I thought about you because I think you were.
I was like, I was imagining she was so happy.
Yeah, Kim, were you happy?
Kim, walk us through your headspace as you're watching that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, first of all, we skipped over my dark headspace where I was like, excuse me, night swim, mention of sharks.
Oh my god.
Water. I was like,
of water are connected.
Stop making me think Kendall's gonna die any second. Like, literally, when he was just off screen for like a little too long, I was like, Shiv, look over your shoulder again one more time. Please let me make sure that Kendall is sitting on that dock alive right now. So really good job of like making me feel tense, I guess, throughout that, where I was like, I think what's happening is good for Kendall, and yet I'm more in fear for his life than I have been most of this season. And then like the whiplash of like, oh, now they're all just together in the kitchen. I have two sisters. I'm the middle of three. And like that vibe of like being a little bit like late in the house, try not to disturb your parents, but you're like a little delirious, maybe high on some like caffeine or sugar or like a good movie that you just watched, like, or something. I loved that scene. I was sitting there being like, I think checked the timestamp. I was like, okay, 45 more minutes for this to not feel good anymore.
Were you bracing yourself?
I was. I still could not shake that.
You knew.
That feeling that, I mean, I knew that we obviously weren't going to leave here at the peak. So, yeah, but it was nice
the
to
rest
have,
of the 25 minutes
it.
Was them being happy. It's just them building Waystar together.
Was so happy that Kendall's meal fit for a king was brown sludge. Like very, very Kendall coded again. Love it. Love everything. Yeah.
But yeah, it's a wonderful sequence and there's so many amazing moments. You know, Roman licking the cheese. You know.
So good.
It's just so chaotic, you know? Yeah.
Kendall's impression of his mom was really good. When he's talking about her talking about Peter. Oh, mm-hmm. So good.
Yeah. Good times.
By the way, I am now seeing that apparently the finale is set in Barbados, so I'm just like, I think I was
this
actually right about
thing
that.
Is really, it's, you gonna be okay?
I wish that Succession had title cards is kind of what I'm saying. They could have just said, you know, in big letters like in a superhero movie, like New York, Barbados, you know, like they should have done that.
I was watching it being like, I'm not really sure where they are, and I guess it doesn't matter because it's just one of their rich
It's one of their
properties.
Rich island countries, you know,
somewhere.
Rich island properties.
No, they found the only shithole in paradise. She said it.
God.
Let's see. I'm trying to think if there's anything else in the early part of the episode or the midpoint to discuss. But yeah, Mark Mylod in the post episode rundown was saying like how, you know, he was saying when he was directing it, he was sad because he knows that however happy they're going to be, it just means that the come down is going to be brutal. And so even the creator or the director of the show knew that badness was coming. So
yeah,
that was the only thing that was really getting me the entire time.
What was the idea that they're so happy?
That there was that the level of joy was just so high, and it was just crazy to think how are they going to get it that low? Because you just know if they're here, they're going to meet them here. You know,
It kind of did. I guess now that I'm thinking about it, the fact that they included that scene and then left everything where they did, it's like they could have those nights again. Right. It's like the idea that like now whenever they get together for like their messed up family gatherings, like that they still know how to like potentially come together and whatever. But
well,
also
here's a real question, Kim. Do you think it's the first time they've ever been that happy together?
Mm. No, I think it's the first time in a long time, like since they were kids, that they've been that happy together.
Yeah,
but it had the same energy to me as like, oh yeah, we used to do this. We just kind of forgot in our old and cynical.
Yeah,
and
I feel like weirdly in each finale, there's been those moments. Cause I feel like on the boat at one point in one of the finales, they had that too. Or it was just kind of like them fucking around and seeming normal and not seeming extremely toxic and hateful towards each other.
Yes, like it was when they were there for Shiv's wedding and they like went down to that little
at the little
thing.
Boat. Yeah, on the,
That was nice.
And then they did it even in last year or when they were in Italy and they were like outside, even though that was cathartic in a different way. And they were like when they were ready to go take the company back or whatever or block the deal.
Yeah. Ugh. And I also just thematically I appreciated that scene because every time that they've been like quote unquote hosted by their mother, they are always referencing the fact that she like never feeds them, like she never actually produces enough food, or like that even though they're so wealthy,
she gave them the bird full of pellets. What do you mean?
the booties. I always called the ends of bread butts. They were always bread butts in my house. But like the fact that they in that moment were coming together, even in their own like little, you know, we're ironically being friends and we're ironically cooking you food, Kendall, or whatever. But like the way that they were like trying to nourish each other off of just like the crumbs that their mother had, and then they obviously don't have their father anymore. It was just, it was a very nice sibling moment of like, oh, you can, out of the crap you've been dealt, maybe figure out how to make yourselves a little bit of a better life here.
I did. I thought they broke at one point when Snook caught all three of the pieces of bread.
The bread.
That was genuinely impressive. Like, to catch all three of those in a row that quickly, it's like, that's hard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
True.
Shout out to Sarah Snook and or Shiv. Shiv Roy.
You can't fake that. You can't act your way into catching all the bread, you know? That takes skill.
Frozen nobbies.
Oh my god, CC in the comments. The nobbies are my favorite part of the bread. That's true psycho behavior. Kim, do you like the nobbies of the bread? I think they're horrible.
They're by far the worst.
The nobbies are the ones that you tear up and feed to ducks.
Yeah, or you make into croutons.
The order of the bees says the hint of how this is going to turn left was Shiv spitting in his meal. It said it all.
That's really good.
It reminded me of this scene in Memento, the Christopher Nolan movie, where Carrie Ann Moss spits into Leonard Shelby's drink and then like hands it to him before he like drinks from it. I don't know if you guys remember that movie, but very different circumstances,
like,
of course.
It makes me like just like my just yeah. like a shiver.
Yeah. So then we get to the end. We get to the end game, right? They all head to the board meeting. There's this stopover at Connor's new palatial estate, right, where they see this.
Wait, what's wrong, Kim? Kim's sad sigh. Really, I wanted to know what she was so sad about. Sorry, Dave. Finish your description.
It's such a depressing. Like, it was already a depressing home, in my opinion, and like it's so much sadder when it's all like really being part and parceled out for like an estate sale, but they're in like the pre-estate sale phase where it's like family gets to identify what they're it felt very cold and sad to me, and not what I thought Connor and Willow were going to be our sort of happy couple, and then I was like, oh no.
Yeah, no one's happy. No one's allowed to be happy.
Who would have thought that we would get another Logan Roy appearance in the episode, which is apparently a scene filmed on an iPhone. And the kids watch it together and they have a little bonding moment. So this is like another moment where they're all coming together and things like, hey, it's only upside for the kids from this point forward, right? Like, there's nothing bad's going to happen from this point forward. So
Kim, did you cry then when you saw Jeremy Strong cry, or when you saw Kendall crying and like, and they were all feeling like that, like real closure from their dad's death?
It felt like sweet to me, but I didn't feel myself getting emotional. I think I was distracted by like the footage that I was also watching. Oh. But it felt very true to life in that like that just happens, right? Once you're in that phase of grieving and like funerals and oh, now we're like divvying up the stuff or whatever. Like, I think the mood in a room can go very quickly from, oh, we're all just doing this. It's the natural order of business. Yes, yes. I want Mother's China to like, oh fuck, this is real and this is happening and we're all going to have a moment here to like cry and then like gather ourselves and move on. So I recognize it as a very like tender and relatable thing, but still nothing since Roman breaking down at the funeral has made me like fully cry in succession. Mm-hmm. But maybe I'm just, maybe it's a phase. No. Maybe it's a 24 hours I'm going through of not crying. I don't know.
Oh, there was one other very random thing I wanted to acknowledge that I really liked about the lead up to all the siblings bonding. And that is that once Kendall uncovers Mattson's plan to make someone else CEO, Shiv needs some way to verify that that is true. And so Kendall says, hey, go ask Carolina for the press release. You'll see that your name is not on it anymore. And I mean, I am skeptical as to whether Carolina would send her the press release in that condition, but that felt to me like, oh, that feels like relatively true. If there's something that you're leaving out until the very last minute, it would be reflecting the press release. David Cho, I'm curious, you know, if you have any opinion on how realistically that all played out with Shiv being screwed out of having the CEO job at the end there.
I thought that was really accurate. I also thought that when so they call the banker Telly as like an independent third party.
Yeah.
And Kendall calls him and he says, hey, man, did you get my text? And he's like, yeah, I just got it. I just read it. And then he asks him, do you think Shiv is going to get fired? Like I said, effectively, I was like, damn, did Kendall just really like 12D chess it and send him a text telling Telly to be like, tell Shiv that she's fucked, whether you know it or not? He's like, should we call Laird? Should we call Telly? And like, he kind of is like, I'm sure he sent text to both of them saying, we're going to call you. Just tell her it's fucked. Because he knows that I believe that he knows that it is fucked, but he needs that really driven home.
Right.
And so I kind of like that was sort of I thought that was good gamesmanship by Kendall.
That makes sense. That's something that's very plausible that he would do.
Yeah. And it's like the way it's like done, it's in a way where it's like when the first thing he says, did you get my text?
Yeah.
It's like that to me was like such a specific reference to how you would do that.
Yeah.
Because he's not bad at a lot of stuff. Like he's pretty, like the thing is, like we spent the last three episodes seeing Kendall being actually pretty good at being the Waystar CEO.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like launching like Living Plus and all that stuff. Like I don't agree with the product, but it's like he did a good job, you know, and it's like he did a good job at the funeral, and it's like, you know, he was pulling it together, but like all of that was why he was never going to win, because this is not a show where that's what wins.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think they made it clear that it wasn't sustainable for Kendall or Roman to keep it up, even though I feel like they both had their fits and starts of being effective successors to Logan.
Right.
But it was obvious that they couldn't. They like ultimately, I feel like every time that they really tried to follow it through, they would fall apart. And it feels like Shiv saw, again, not to jump ahead, but like, I'm still not totally sure about all of Shiv's motivations and in what order they came to her. But like, I do think that she recognized that, like, yes, Kendall could do that, but that doesn't mean that he should, or that like that will be a sustainable thing for him to step into.
Speaking of corporate realism, another thing I really appreciated about it was at the end of the episode. So we get to the board meeting, okay? Kendall holds up the packet that lays out all the stuff about the Gojo acquisition, and on the packet it says Project Mediterranean. That they named the acquisition deal Project Mediterranean. That feels to me extremely realistic. Like I have been part of Project Blank, and it's like not all Project Blank are like a bit like we're launching a new iPhone. It's like Project Blank can just be, this is a big business deal, or it's a big sort of thing that requires a lot of coordination to execute. So I appreciated that. David Cho, you agree?
Totally. Of course. Yeah. Love it. Yeah. Love a good project code. Naming
a good project code name
is really fun.
Yeah, I agree. And it's kind of like vague enough that it's like, oh, I can kind of see how you got there. But
if you do it well, if you do it right, it's like poetic and symbolic.
Yes.
And
exactly, you know, right.
Mediterranean has something to do. Like, I'm sure there's like a good story behind it, too. Yeah. We'll find that out in like a David Itzkoff interview in the next 2 days.
There is a so the vote begins, let's just say, and they start going around the table, and it's 6v6, and it's time for Shiv's vote, and it feels very similar to season 1, episode 6, as we've discussed. There is this moment when Roman votes, and then like I think Kendall's like, F yeah, because last time it was Roman's lack of vote that completely screwed him out of the whole deal, right? So when Roman votes on Kendall's side, it's like Kendall's like, yes, like home stretch, baby. Like
Kendall's never seen the show Succession. If he'd seen the show, he'd know that yeah, baby was the nail in the coffin for him.
Can't count your chickens before they've hatched.
Shiv storms out of the room, and they have this big confrontation where Shiv has decided that she changes her mind. And I think, as you were saying, Kim, I think there's not, like, at this moment as we're recording, we probably still have some disagreement about why she changed her mind. David Cho, what's your kind of operating idea for why Shiv changed her mind at the end?
I think that Shiv did it because Shiv wanted to feel like she was someone who loved. I think she wanted to feel like she could do something for her partner, for her husband, for her child, and set their family up to succeed. And I think she's struggled with being a good person and a and a fit mother per what her mother is like instilled in her from an insecurity perspective. And I think it's like, you know, it's like, what did they fight? Oh yeah, Shiv and Tom had that last fight in the house at Logan's house when like she finds out that Tom got the job.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she's really trying to figure out like what is the thing I can do to be someone who actually isn't selfish for once. You know, because like Tom says to her, like, you would have done the same thing. And I think between that and the other fights they've had over the last like four episodes, which are very like, those are the most devastating fights. Like when the one that him and her, the two of them have outside on their balconies, like it's so real. And it's so like every single painful and vulnerable thing is just like so like publicly articulated or so like specifically articulated. I think to me, that's what it was. I don't think it was anything aside. Like, I don't think it had anything to do with, honestly, Kendall's merit. I think she did it for Tom. And because it's like we've seen her fuck over Tom every which way for the last 4 years of TV time or of our time, you know?
Yeah, I saw a lot of chatter online that's like, for once, Shiv was thinking about her family instead of her family. Do you know what I mean? Like, she was thinking about her family. And I think that's a great way of conceptualizing it. So that strikes me as the most plausible. Now then, all the other stuff, like the dead waiter and lying about that, and all, like that kind of like puts her over the edge. But I think I agree with, like, that's where my head is at, is with David Cho, that like that's kind of the initial idea of why she changed her mind. That plus David Cho, she realizes that Kendall is not a good fit after all. Because
show anything that would make her think that.
Yeah, well, I think she just kind of like thought about it and realized, hey, this is actually a bad idea, kind of thing. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's the most her dad thing she could have done is to not believe in Kendall and not believe in any of the kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Kim Renfro, any thoughts on Shiv's big turn at the end?
I think I agree with the fact that all of those things were in her head. I guess I'm not as inclined to think that she did it for Tom or with Tom's feelings.
You don't think she did
it
to like prove to Tom?
I think she did it because she realized after, like, in the course of the last two seasons for sure, but at least like the last like several episodes, she thought that she gained her brother's confidence and like support and lost it very quickly. She thought she gained Mattson's support and confidence and then lost that very quickly too. And she had clearly pushed Tom away as far as possible. Like at the start of this episode, how she's kind of like trying to reopen that door.
Mm-hmm.
And he's obviously very reluctant to it, which I don't blame him because it just feels a little like opportunist at that point. But like, I think that she saw the only path forward for herself was to stay attached to Tom.
So you think it's forever selfishness? It's forever like self-preservation.
I think it is her instinct to like just think that she has to look out for herself and that's it. And for her right now, staying married to Tom, having his baby, having it be like, oh, we're married, we're co-raising this kid, and I'm also presumably going to continue influencing ATN and or Pierce or whatever news thing.
She's still
my husband. Like, it felt like a mutually assured compromise from both of them. And like, I believed her when she said like, okay, we've already said the worst things we could ever say to each other. So now I feel like I can't possibly like mess this up more than I already did. So they're kind of restarting, but like from the agreed upon place that like, I don't know. It does not feel like there is any actual love or respect there. It feels like they have both resigned themselves to knowing that if they want to maintain power and influence the way that they both really want to, they like have to do it together. Plus I like the whole bloodline stuff also like caught me off guard when the siblings were fighting.
Really shocking stuff because
I mean that shit was dark.
It was dark.
Right. So what we're talking about,
that clicked for Shiv in a weird way.
So let's explain what that is. Oh, sorry, did you have a response?
I just on the thing, Kim, I wonder like like, to me, I don't think I wasn't trying to say that Shiv was actually like capable of like unselfish behavior, but more yeah. the idea that she wants to think that she is someone who can do that and sort of like took that route. But I mean, I don't know. It's like it's probably honestly like many human decisions, a combination of all of the above. Right. Totally. It's like they're all sort of, there's something, Dave, before we move on, there's something in the chat that I think is that we forgot about, which is the Kendall.
Yeah. I was going to get to that next.
Oh, yeah. Because that was before that, right? That's like,
yeah, yeah, it was before. The order of the bees mentions in the chat. I hope you guys talk about that hug when Roman began to break down. That was a weird hug and felt more like a kill. So there's this moment when Roman is saying, like, hey, like, Jerry comes in. He's very upset by that. And then he says to Kendall, like, it could have been me. And Kendall's like, yeah, it could have been you. It was very marginal. It almost was you. And then he kind of gives him this hug. And it's this very intense embrace where it's so tight of a hug that it literally, like, ruptures Roman's wound stitching on his head. Like it ripped the stitches. Now, I originally thought it was like, oh, it's to rip the stitches out so that way Roman doesn't need to go to the meeting. He has a good excuse not to go to the meeting. But then he shows up at the meeting anyway.
Weird, like, kink shit too. It's just like he loves, he's like, has a masochistic like pain thing as well, where it's like he wants to feel that pain.
Yeah.
And to drive his forehead into that.
Yeah.
Into his brother's shoulder is just
So you thought Roman was the one that was like,
I mean, Kim, what did you think?
I thought Roman in that moment was feeling like he couldn't go into that room and face everyone and say, I'm not even like fighting for it to be me anymore. It's definitely Kendall, without having some sort of like physical sign of his breakdown that he was going through. Right. Because like, I think that he felt pretty positioned to either continue to be co-CEO or to step into that right up until he got up on that eulogy pedestal and like fell apart. And to me, like all the things that he was saying about, oh, like it actually like looks pretty good. Like it doesn't look that bad.
He's talking about the physical wound on his body at that point.
Yes.
Right?
I think that I read it as him and Kendall both acknowledged in the same moment and decided to like do this thing in a weird way to make Roman appear worse than he might be physically for the sake of him having like more of a cover of like, this is why I can't do this right now. This is why I can't fight so hard. Like I'm in a terrible, I'm in terrible straits. And like, it's like almost like a cover plus combined with something that, again, a lot of dark stuff in this episode, but that I recognized, which is that sometimes, especially when I was a kid, and I think a lot of Roman is like trapped in his like childhood years. I think that we've seen that come out a lot, especially when he was breaking down at the funeral and like the way that he was asking, like, is he in there? Can we get him out? Like, it was very like this childlike understanding of how to express feelings or thoughts. And like when I was younger, I would have times where like I was in a lot of emotional pain and it frustrated me that people can't see that, or that like a kid with a broken arm gets a lot of sympathy and gets a lot of, oh my God, what happened to you? Or like, that's so sad. But then like that feeling of like, oh, if I had a physical injury, people would be able to offer me sympathy and support in a way that I don't know how to ask for when there's nothing visible wrong going on, you know? So like that immediately clicked to me as like Roman feeling like he needed a physical manifestation of the pain that he was in order to face that room, or like not just shrink away entirely.
I mean, it was like him doing what he did at the end of last episode again, right?
Yeah.
Like he wants to feel anything, everything, and just like, you know, wants the pain. Oh
yeah.
God, it was
like
so
physical pain is easier for him to process than emotional pain, I think. And especially given that he's the only kid of Logan's that we saw physically hit multiple times. Dark.
So then there is a big there is a massive fight that breaks out between the siblings, and it's incredible. I think this is like some of Jeremy Strong's strongest work. Just complete regression, you know, the part where he says like, I'm the eldest boy. That's like one of the key lines of the episode. And it's really like,
you're not.
Yeah. And it's just like, wow, the arguments have been reduced to this. And you sense how much of an addict he is. And he's jonesing for control. And this is what's going to give his life meaning and purpose. By the way, in the chat, somebody said something about Shiv. Aaron Credible says, Shiv betrayed her siblings so that her estranged husband could get a temp CEO job that Mattson could fire him from any time. End quote. I think Aaron is trying to say that Shiv made a bad move or that's uncharacteristic, or it wasn't worth it. But it's like, that strikes me as pretty standard for any of these Roy children. Like, they're always just looking for the next thing. They don't care what the long-term plan is. They're just like, let's get to the next thing. So I actually find that to be actually an accurate and sad description of what happens. But yeah, I thought the Jeremy Strong breakdown was incredible. David Cho, any thoughts on like how this final confrontation plays out?
I mean, I think it's so sad and dark to see someone do whatever they can to grasp at this thing that they want so badly. I think it's just like, I don't know, it's like fucking, it's so dark and it's just so tragic. And it's just like, and it's funny because it's like, he really, no sympathy for Kendall as a, on a human level, but as a character we watch on TV, it's like, it's just crazy to see this person have this thing dangled in front of him so many times and just have it like, you know, it's like Lucy with the football every single time. And every time it just gets closer and closer. And it's just like, that was the one thing that I did feel weird about with the finale of just like, it's both accurately so repetitive, but also so repetitive. You know what I mean? It's like, it's something we'd seen so many times, just to see it happen again for some reason. Just like, you know, it's both the most correct thing, but also in some ways the most frustrating thing to see.
I liked that at least they went meta with their mom being like, oh, an important board meeting. I've never had anything in my life interrupted for a big board meeting. I was like, yeah, this is the exact same thing that we've done so many times.
There are a lot of amazing moments in the final confrontation. Kendall's breakdown and his whole attitude during that scene is just amazing to watch. The idea of just being so close, like, he has worked for 4 freaking seasons and he is one vote away from achieving that which he wants. It's just like, oh, so tragic and poetic and sad. And then it gets super dark, as you mentioned, David Cho, which is... they start talking about bloodlines, right? Which is like really upsetting where, you know, Roman says like, of Shiv, like she's in the bloodline. It's not going to be Roman. It's not going to be Kendall. Roman then describes Kendall's children. Now we've seen Kendall's children. It seems like one of them is, it seems like one of them is not their biological child, right? And yeah. What we find out, according to Roman, this is the language Roman's using. I do not endorse this language. But he says one is a buy-in and one is half Rava, half filing cabinet guy.
Dave, I can't believe you said that. Oh my God. Is that what you think? Is that how your brain works?
I don't even know what
disgusting.
I don't even know what that even means, like half filing cabinet. But anyway, it's very disparaging. And so it's like Shiv is the only one who's like bloodline who will continue the Roy bloodline. Because it's not going to be Kendall, it's not going to be Roman.
Except for Roman's kid from the pilot.
Except for Roman's kid from the pilot, who we shall never speak of again. Roman was quoting Logan, but obviously he was deploying that language in a very upsetting way, in my opinion. Like that's like, and of course, like very dark, and it causes them to fight. And
bro, when he went for the face eggs, are you kidding me?
I know.
Oh my God.
The face eggs.
Someone in the chat, I'm sorry, I can't find the comment now, but somebody said, like, Kendall's arc went from, like, defending Roman from Logan at Argestes to now he's, like, attacking Roman himself, right? He has truly become his father in this episode.
Yeah. The fan cams are going to go crazy with this one.
Yeah.
I'm not prepared.
So, anyway. And then it's over. Like Kendall tries to salvage it. He like walks in and he's like,
the little hair tufts Like, his just, like, the very slight dysfunction of, like, his hair in that moment while he's, like, trying to, like, stiffen back in, like, power mode.
Aww. He's like, yeah, let's adjourn this meeting. And Frank's like, it's over, man. It's over.
Like, someone already, you can't even adjourn the meeting. Right. It's already happened. It's over. Also, Kendall, I mean, I guess I was.
Frank.
Of what?
I can't believe he couldn't get Frank. Mm-hmm. I thought he had Frank when they were talking in the coat room.
No. Wait, I also wonder. I was gonna say. I wonder if Shiv was surprised by Sandy going yes, because it felt like before the actual vote happened,
that felt Shiv like it was, got edited out.
Yeah.
Because she does power walking to go talk to Sandy with Stewie,
right?
And then it's like a non-factor that they didn't get her.
Right.
Yeah, that was weird, because going in, it seemed like they had Sandy, right? That was like,
right.
Yeah.
Well, they make it a point to be like, oh, they're going to, like, Stewie and Shiv are going to go get Sandy and Sandy, and she does a very good walk through a hallway to go see him.
And right. Then,
yeah.
That just popped in my head as maybe one more reason why Shiv might have waffled when it got to her. Mm-hmm. Maybe she wasn't expecting to be the deciding vote
right.
in the right. majority. And that was another of, again, the many factors that we've gone into of, like, what made her get out of that chair and walk out.
When it's all said and done, like, Roy kids are going to Roy kids. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's just what happened in this episode. It's like they Roy kids the most they could have ever Roy kids.
Yes.
The whole thing I was the whole time I was wondering to myself, how much of this can everyone hear? Because it seems like based on the cutaways, it seems like they can hear everything. It seems like. When you hear it from their perspective, like the board perspective, it seems like you can hear everything, which is wild to me.
Yeah.
And then when they start fighting, it's like the whole point of the day is to present to the board like we are a credible alternative to this. So when they're like physically beating each other up, it's like it's over, man. They've already destroyed all their credibility. It's brutal. Brutal.
And then Kendall gets in an elevator, and then there's like another person in the elevator, and I was
the other guy looks so happy in the elevator too. He's like, bro, read the room.
But I was like, okay, Kendall's not riding the elevator to the roof by himself. That's a plus. And then it was like, again, he was off camera for a little too long, and I was like, someone check me back in on Kendall. I'm so stressed this entire time. I'm not seeing Kendall on screen.
They CGI'd in that shot of Colin walking behind Kendall for you because they knew Kim wouldn't be able to handle it. If we saw Kendall walking down the street towards water by himself.
I thought he was about to take off his coat, not sit on the bench. And I was like, no, don't do it. But then I was like, he sat down and they showed me Colin. And I was like, I feel okay now. But then it was like cut to black and I still haven't fully processed everything.
There is also a nice moment where Tom talks to Greg. And you think Tom is going to cut Greg out. But he lets him back in. That's how deep their love goes. Is Greg has just betrayed Tom, like, in the most brutal fashion possible. And Tom is still like, you know what? I still got a place for you, because Tom needs a Greg in his life. Tom needs a Greg. That's
the
kind of
the sticker moment was adorable.
It was.
Yeah, that was nice.
I thought that was the
true love story. Those are the two people. Forget about Connor, Willa, Tom, Shiv, Tom and Greg. Those are the two people that love each other the most in this show, right? I think we all know that. So anyway, shall we get to the final shots or anything else before we wrap up tonight, folks? If you're in the chat, this is your last opportunity to put topics that you want us to discuss. But yeah.
You guys, you can't soundproof glass offices like that. It's like sound's going to travel, you know?
Yeah.
Like, reverberate even.
Yeah.
People can lip read, you know what I mean? Like, it's not.
People can slide a phone under that gap of any glass wall office.
That's the thing, too, is like you got to imagine there's going to be like leaks of that. You know, like there's so many witnesses. There's like dozens of people there. They would someone's tweeting about something that they DMing some journalist.
Someone's skeeting about.
Yeah. Kendall's
going to play the best game of good tweet, bad tweet.
Someone's mastituting about that. Yeah. So the final shots. We get a scene of Tom and Shiv, and I actually kind of liked it. Tom puts his hand out, flat palm, and then Shiv kind of like awkwardly positions her hand on top of his. Oh wait!
Yeah, the witch. We have to talk about the witch when they're fighting, and he's like, "You killed that guy," and then Kendall's like, "Witch." And God. It's so fucking weird.
Yeah.
Do we like, think, do you think there are multiple yeah. more than one person?
I don't think so. I think that was not my interpretation. My interpretation was just that he had completely put it out of his head. He had completely put that idea out of his head. Like it was, you know, NRPI, like he was not even thinking about that person as a factor. But yeah, the moment when he's like, I just made that up. That's like the lowest that Kendall has ever sunk in his entire life. Like when he's like, I made up that I killed this person because I thought I needed something to bring us together. And then Shiv and Roman react more violently to that than if he had just copped to it at that, you know, like they're like,
yeah.
Whoa, that's really messed up that you made that up. Like if that's yeah. a fact. So
yeah,
I think it's worse to kill someone than to make it up.
Call Good me to crazy. Know. Let me write that one down.
Yeah. Thanks.
I would say
Thanks,
on the David scale, Joe. I think I'd say on the scale of things, I think making it up is better than murdering someone or, you know, being responsible for someone's death.
Yeah. Ugh. Some AES in the chat says he memory holed NRPI. So which was him asking who are you talking about? But
yeah, I think that, okay. that feels like the right read.
Okay. But I also like that Greg was still in the room when they signed the contract, and Mattson acknowledges Greg and is like, we have the whole Jesus and the disciples and Judas here, which is just like, I don't know that Mattson would really take a betrayal like that, but that is like kind of funny to me that, you know, Greg's probably still going to be involved in the company after this point. So
I texted Dave and Kim before the show started airing being like, if it ends up being Greg, I'm going to be so upset. And at one point, there's something where Mattson says something about like he wants a good looking CEO or something like that. And I was like, oh, fuck. He called Greg sexy last episode. It's going to fucking be Greg and I'm going to hate this show. And I was really worried about that the entire time.
I feel like I get partial credit for guessing that Greg was going to continue failing upward this season.
He didn't not.
Yeah. But whether it's Greg or Tom, I think like Greg
the
or Tom.
The theory was, the theory holds.
Greg or Tom being on top is like either one reaffirms kind of the thesis of the show, right? Which is like this empty headed, no talent person can fail their way to the top. And
of HBO
that was
Max. Of Warner Brothers. Of Warner Brothers HBO Discovery.
This David Zaslav-esque, I mean, Greg-esque person can fail their way to the top. Even though they have no idea what the hell they're doing. Yeah. Okay.
I also like full like gasp out loud moment when like Nicholas Braun making what I think was full contact with Matthew McFadyen's the first slap was good, but like I've seen Tom. I think that I had in my mind what it would look like for Tom to slap a person, but like Greg's arm coming out like that and just walloping Tom in the face was so good.
There was a lot of really good rich white guys who don't want to actually get in a fight fighting in this episode, of just like that thing of like they're not afraid to do the first thing, but everything after that they kind of want to just like avoid at all in all ways possible.
Yeah. I'm just gonna guess that's not the last Tom Greg bathroom tussle that will happen in their lives.
I wanted to acknowledge Rubalicious in the chat says David Cho is hella funny.
Wow. Hella funny.
David Cho is hella funny.
David Chen's gonna take that as a personal insult.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right.
I'm
so
hear
anyway,
about that from David Chen for weeks.
As I was saying, Tom puts his hand out. Shiv kind of rests her hand on top awkwardly, and like they don't actually hold hands. And it's kind of like, it's like, hey, we've agreed that maybe this situationship is what we need. You know?
Yeah, I said this earlier, but big end of Gone Girl energy to me of like two terrible people who have now agreed to be trapped in a terrible marriage for the rest of their lives because it's the best that they think they can do while maintaining the power and status that they want.
Also, being in an unhappy relationship is very, very sad and tragic and dark and all of that. Like, it's like to be at that moment, to be Tom and to not have your wife like hold your hand in a real way, and for Shiv to be like trying to start this family with this person who like she just has no real love towards. It's just like, I don't know. It's so dark.
doesn't bode well for that child.
Yeah.
We see Roman, like a glimpse of Roman in a bar with, like I said, an impish smile. That's it's a little bit of a low-key ending for Roman, I think, you know?
Guy's just having a martini.
Yeah, he's just like, all right, I'm just going to go on living my life, and that's it, you know?
What was up with martinis in this episode? Matson was drinking a martini.
It's too. A great drink. What do you mean, what's up with the martini?
I know it's a great drink. It's like my go-to. I just feel like we don't normally see martinis in the show. It's usually a lot of brown liquor in round cups, and like it felt like
Kendall
there was a little
Kendall
more
did
pomp.
A little brown. Kendall did a little brown way we got in the office.
Of course he did. Of course he did some brown.
Let's talk about the Kendall final shot. He's kind of... Go ahead. What's
I
up
saw here? Someone pointed out Jerry loves martinis, and I think that's it. Mm-hmm. That just answered my question. Jerry is one of the only characters we've seen regularly drinking martinis, and Roman being sad and knowing that he has forever ruined his relationship with Jerry and drinking a martini alone.
Wow.
Feels fitting.
Ron Dawson says, I actually think Tom and Shiv will eventually reconcile and have genuine love for each other. They have the seeds of it. I've seen worse marriages be saved. I don't know if I agree with that.
Aw, Ron. That's sweet, but also no fucking way. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm mostly like, Ron, who do you know?
I love that
married?
For you. I love that. I love that optimism for you. But, ugh.
Yeah. Roman actually imitated Jerry asking for a martini in an episode. I don't remember that.
Is that the one where he makes fun of the boyfriend that Jerry has? Or maybe it's when they're at the bar at the tailgate party.
Aaron Credible says, Tom Wamsgams is like the Jamie Lannister of the show. You hate him at first and he's a dick, but then he goes through so much shit for the entire show. At the end, you really feel sorry for him.
Yeah,
I deeply disagree with that.
I don't know. Well, no, but like Kim, think of it this way.
He's more like the Tormund of the show, right? No, I'm just joking. I don't know.
Like Tom does have the shittiest moments though, where it's like the night of the wedding or the guy who she's been cheating on him with, and she's like asking for an open marriage the night of the wedding when they're at that rock beach at the end of season two. And she's like, she was just talking about how much she doesn't love him.
Yeah.
And then like, it's just like, it is so, so bad every single time. I'm not saying that
he didn't like go through the depths of tragedy that maybe
it's also what he signed up
encountered.
For though.
I don't think that he has nearly atoned for his sins in the way that Jamie wound up at least starting to. Like,
well,
Tom doesn't have a single person that he's actually like looking out for.
Well, you remember in season three though, when he had his arm or hand chopped off, I think for the human table things, right? I don't know. That happened to Jamie Lannister, right? He had his hand chopped off.
He got his hand chopped off because he was defending Brienne from being assaulted. Tom has never done anything chivalrous.
Wait, Kim, I have a real question for you. Do you think that that Succession is better than Succession, the TV show, is better than Game of Thrones, the TV show?
Literally can't answer that.
Come on, do it.
No. David,
I mean,
we've
had
a very pleasant chat. Let's not ruin it.
Because I'm trying to like dodge having a hot take. I'm just someone who needs to like process things multiple times. Like, I'm going to need to rewatch season four of Succession and probably the whole thing before I feel confident enough to make an assessment in that.
I don't think I could rewatch the election episode again. It took me to such a dark place. I don't think I could do it.
I could barely rewatch Too Much Birthday again. So
which one is Too Much Birthday?
Kendall's birthday, the one where Roman pushes.
Oh, where
him
he pushes
down.
Him down. Yeah.
Oh, pain, and also I'm sad. Speaking of loose ends, we never got. Kendall did not sing a goddamn song this season, and I'm really sad about it.
Here's the thing, though. It's like they'd. When you have L to the OG, it's really hard to do another song. You know what I mean? Just because, like, you can't. That's when you reach that high. It's like how do you put out another song when you've done that? You know, you've made something. You've made an image that's so iconic with just like when he's like has his like arm flipped out a little bit. It's like it's so special.
No, you're right. I was thinking more like again the Too Much Birthday episode. We see him like rehearsing a song,
and he sings,
but like
the song
not the actual
beginning.
So I was like there has to be some other iteration, and then when they went to karaoke I was like, oh, he's gonna sing a song karaoke, and then only Connor sang a song, and I didn't get my Kendall song. So that's more of my I'm gonna write some good fan fiction about Kendall standing up from that bench after having gazed out at the Statue of Liberty and going to a karaoke bar and performing.
I think he's
himself.
At Brookfield Mall when that's happening, which Ooh. Is very dark.
Yeah. Good call. Good call.
So a Twitter account called Kendall Hosini has tweeted that Jeremy Strong said they did a shot where Kendall climbed over the rail and Colin runs to stop him, end quote. I have no idea if this is just some BS this account made up, and it's very possible it could be, but I just wanted to throw that out there. So I tweeted or I Instagrammed my predictions for today's finale today, and I got a bunch of stuff wrong. I thought Greg would be the winner. But I did predict that the final shot of the show would be Kendall Roy, and gotta say
it was Kendall's show when it's all
Kendall
said
Roy
and
water.
It really was Kendall's show.
Nailed it.
Yeah, Kendall Roy and water. Yeah, yeah. It was Kendall's show. Yeah, go ahead, Kim.
Sorry, I was just reading the chat. I don't think it was the South Street Seaport. I think I was literally just there. I think that it's somewhere between Battery Park and the Brookfield Center.
No, like, I think it's the little thing in Brookfield where it's like when you walk out of the mall and then there's mm-hmm. like that big cement area. I believe it's there. I'm like 75% sure. I'll check.
Oh, okay. Apparently that story is true. Somebody CD in the chat is saying it's true. He said it on the HBO podcast where they did a shot where he went over the rail. I think they went with the more subdued and better choice for the ending. That would have been a very different tone if it ended with Kendall trying to jump over the rail and Colin stopping him. It wouldn't have been out of character, but I think it would have really been a different tone, you know?
It would have been a much weirder way to end it on.
Yes.
I thought as
it would run the risk of being
water,
comical. It would run the risk of being comical almost, you know. Anyway,
I thought as he was approaching the banister, I felt like he was going to jump in, and I had clocked that Colin was following him, and I was like, is Colin, if he did, would Colin stop him or would Colin let it happen? Which is again very dark, but like,
yeah, because we know Colin's not super happy about working for him, you know. So
no. Wait, and why? We know that Colin knows that there's a lot of skeletons in his closet, and like, I don't know. That's where my head went. And then again, he didn't take off his jacket and he sat down. And I was like, okay, they're not going with that. They're going with like, we're ending on this reflective moment of Kendall.
Well, Kendall has the rest of his life to end his life. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, I think that's just the immediate moment. It's like, he's going to be wallowing in this for a while. I just hope they all find good therapy.
Yeah,
I think it's a great way to end the show. David Cho, as you put it, like it has been Kendall's show. It's very poetic. It's very, his is the journey that I think we follow the most throughout the show. And so for it to end on him, kind of realizing that he has nothing left, the thing he longed for most is denied him, and he needs to live with that for the rest of his life, I think is really appropriate. After the episode, Jesse Armstrong was saying how, like, yeah, this is, he will look back on this as like the defining moment of his entire life.
Yeah.
And we get to witness it here on the series finale of Succession. We'll read a few more comments before we wrap up here, but I do want to mention, if you're just joining us, we have several hundred people watching and chatting with us at youtube.com/decodingTV. And if you're enjoying this chat, be sure to subscribe to the podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. You can support the show at decodingtv.com. And be sure you check out the work of these fine people that I'm talking with, David Cho and Kim Renfro. But David Cho and Kim Renfro, any closing thoughts on this show? We'll do another. We're obviously going to do a separate episode postmortem, but any closing thoughts on this episode of the show as we wrap up here tonight? David Kim? Cho, any other thoughts?
Oh, me? Oh, yeah, stop starting with me first. No, Kim, you go first. I don't have anything.
I mean, I was reflecting before the episode of like what I felt like the show was really trying to get at. And I kept coming back to the speech that Ewan gave in episode 9, where he alludes to the fact that at some point Logan stopped trying to disavow himself of the notion that he had possibly been responsible for his sister's death, and therefore that like he was trapped in this sort of like self-punishment cycle his whole life. And I saw so clearly that that's where Kendall was heading. And I do think that that's part of the point that Jesse Armstrong is trying to make, is that like you have to keep trying, right? Like don't, like that Kendall's that little stride Kendall hit right after his father's funeral of like, I'm not going to try anymore and I'm just going to be my father and damned my past or my own like mental struggles and what I might need to overcome in order to like be a better father, be a better sibling. I wasn't sure how they were going to wrap that up in an episode. And I think that they did do a good job of driving that point home of that sometimes it's just about having to keep trying even after whatever dream you thought that you were living for or whatever messed up thing you thought that you couldn't overcome happens. Yeah.
Yeah. I think to that same point, I think it's hurt people. Everyone should go to therapy and really try to sort out the ways our parents have affected the way we think about our lives. And, you know, even with the best intentions, we all have things we have to work through. You know, I mean, the chat's really going in on this cheese thing. And I think they're right. I think, you know, what happened to Peter's cheese, you know? Like, did he eat the cheese after it was all said and done?
It's so true. It's the biggest mystery that Succession presents to us. By the way, David Depot in the chat says, going to become a patron for the David Show episodes. David is referring to the fact that at patreon.com/DaveChen, I do an ongoing series called Dave on Dave with David Show. And apparently somebody listening, David has listened to this episode. David D has listened to this episode. It's like, he's going to become a patron. And you should, because we've recorded at this point, David Cho, dozens of episodes of Dave on Dave that you can get access to as a patron at patreon.com/DaveChen. So highly recommend if you enjoy this chat. Okay.
Can we talk about Roman licking the cheese?
Can we talk about Roman licking the cheese?
Go back and listen to the podcast. We talked a lot about Roman licking the cheese. It was funny when Kendall did the mom's voice about going down on the cheese.
That was very good.
It scratched a real juvenile itch.
No, don't go down on Peter's cheese.
I do want to acknowledge as we're closing out here that I'm seeing, you know, the chatter online. And even in the chat itself, there is a lot of disagreement about how good the finale was. Like, some people are like, this finale was not good. And to me, it felt very good. Like, I thought this is a very strong finale. But yeah, not everyone agrees. And we'll talk about more people's reactions. I'm curious to hear people's reactions at decodingtv.com and at decodingtv@gmail.com. But when I think back on it, I thought everything landed really well. There's a lot of open questions. Like, I'm seeing a lot of debate about why Shiv did what she did. Like, a lot of people either don't understand or have a different understanding than what we've communicated. So much more to discuss there. But at the end of the day, I want to say...
I think Bree the Commons in the comments or in the chat says the best. Finale was ducking legendary. Ducking and I legendary. Can't help but agree with that.
Indeed. Well, I want to, again... acknowledge two groups of people. One of them are all the paid members at decodingtv.com who have made this podcast possible. It's been such a fun time to do the show with Kim and David throughout the season. And of course, I want to acknowledge Kim Renfro and David Cho. You guys have really been a blast to podcast with and talk about the show with, and I appreciate you both. So thank you for adding so much to both my enjoyment of the show and also to all of our listeners' enjoyment of the show. So
thank you to Dave being patient with us as we were just giggling about going down on the cheese, and Dave just kept it moving. Dave wanted no part of that.
It's been a delight.
Sean Burke, by the way, says, I think internet fandom got ahead of itself with the show, and lots of viewers don't really understand the type of show they're watching. Bullseye, in my opinion, Sean Burke.
Yeah,
I think that is very, very accurate that, like, it's so weird when you're watching a show like Succession and people like speculating about who's going to win and what's happening and who's love child and so on. It's like
Game of Thrones and Westworld like really fucked up the way people watch HBO shows. Mm-hmm. Now. It's it's broken our brains and how we think how TV shows work. So it's like, this wasn't that show. It wasn't a show where the twist was going to be, this is how Kendall gets the thing. It was a show about these people. And how they like interact and how they're just like never gonna be okay. Because until they really confront the things that their dad put them through.
I'm just reading random comments from the chat now. Babs54 says, Mattson saying, I wanna see phones. got me juiced. That was awesome when Mattson storms in the room and he's like,
Mattson's freak out.
Yeah, he's like, I want to see Fowl. It was amazing. I thought that was awesome. So anyway, okay. Well, we'll be back with This Week in Streaming covering Barry. We'll also do a Succession Season 1 postmortem. She is David... She is Kim Renfro. She is Kim Renfro. She is Kim Renfro. He is David Cho. I am David Chen. You're listening to and watching Decoding TV at youtube.com/decodingTV. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you very soon. DecodingTV@gmail.com. Hit us up with your thoughts. We will read them. We will react to them on the podcast next time.
Right oh, wait. Here. I have one thing, Dave.
Okay. Right there at the end.
I know. I'm sorry.
It was at the shiv vote of the pod. It was like right seconds away from being over.
I saw one thing that I do want to say. It's like this person who I think means well, saying in before shiv criticisms labeled as misogyny comments for the next month. I think people can be misogynistic against shiv, and shiv can also be an idiot, and both things can be true. So just saying that's the case. So before you start thinking you're not being misogynistic by shitting on shiv, like both things can be true.
Well, yeah. So there's, I mean, what's being referred to is that there's this whole line of criticism that like shiv made a stupid decision by cashing out, which is like, I just don't. In my first blush, I do not agree with that reading. Like, I think we on this show have presented multiple logical reasons why she would want to make the decisions she made in the show. So, like, on this podcast episode, I should say. So,
and also, the internet is incredibly misogynistic, oftentimes in the way they criticize and talk about women. And so, both things can be true.
Indeed. All right, folks.
I'm sorry.
Great points, fellas.
Thanks.
Way to go.
Thanks, David Cho. I thought I had a really nice. I had the Kendall staring off at the ocean of podcast endings, and instead David Cho was like, let's have him leap over
let's
the
jump over the rail.
It was more like a jet ski going by in the Hudson going, that's like, right. Don't be a misogynist. So I appreciate it.
All right, guys, this has been so much fun, and thanks to all the people that joined us at youtube.com/decodingTV. We hope you've had a fun time as well. Goodbye.
Bye.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.